Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials. Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. Here's a humble request to give us a follow on Instagram at Walk and Talk Show, please, and thank you. Pooch Rivera was with Vince Hayward of Camellia Beans and won the Louisiana Restaurant Association Philanthropy Award last night. Congratulations, Vince. In studio today, we've got the chef, Tony Van Hang from Regency Oaks. He's cooked up some amazing dishes. John, man, the photography, always bad ass. These plates are beautiful. I am excited. The food is still here. I have to eat it. I got to get into it. I'm super excited. It was a goat cheese and broccoli stuffed chicken breast and a crispy skin Gulf grouper. We're going to talk about it. Chefs and food buyers out there, try Aussie Select's fully cooked, pasture-raised Australian lamb. Enjoy flavors like agave rosemary and tikka masala and more. Available sliced or whole. Discover more at AussieSelect.com. By the way, we have this product in-house, and we will be cooking it up soon and getting it out there on video and also photography. Cannot wait for that. It's going to look great on that Rack Porcelain, baby. You know what I'm saying. So, you know, when most people think of artists, they probably picture painters, sculptors, musicians, you know, that sort of creative genius. They work their whole lives and for generations. But, you know, there's one art form out there that's a little bit more fleeting, one that disappears as soon as you take the first bite. And our guest today, Chef Scott Craig, is the master of that kind of transient artistry. As a celebrated club chef who's competed at the highest levels and potentially at the upcoming U.S. Culinary Open at the NAFM Trade Show in Atlanta at the end of February. There's going to be 11 other incredible competitors with Michelin stars, James Beard Awards, and Food Network victories under their belts. Scott has made a career out of elevating the dining experience, turning the simple ingredients into edible works of art. But what's even more impressive is his commitment to mentoring the next generation and sharpening the future of the culinary industry. This is a guy who's truly left his mark, even if his dishes don't stick around forever. Before we welcome Scott on the show, I just want to, I really, Tony, you did an amazing job today. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Do you want to just real quickly jump into what you made?
Yeah, sure. We made a goat cheese and broccoli stuffed breaded chicken, accompanied with sweet potato mousseline and a citrus tarragon cream. And also we made a crispy skin-on golf snapper, right, with pea puree and some garlicky spinach as well with that, and spinach foam.
I tell you what, you know, there's so much green. When I saw the ingredients, I was like, man, that's going to be a lot of green. But it was gorgeous. The pictures are phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, John did a great job, fantastic job taking the photos of it. You know, to me, you know, monochromatic colors, it's great. And just different shades of the same color, it really stands out.
Well, you're making my life better by being in studio and just kind of, you know, preparing these dishes and allowing us to, you know, participate in your world, man. I'm just saying, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks.
Excellent. There's a documentary out there, All Ships Rise. It's about Scott Craig, Chef Scott Craig. Chef, are you with us?
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
That documentary was so well done and awesome. Good job, man.
I appreciate it. I can't take any of the credit. WTWH did a really, really wonderful job.
I wish that every guest had a documentary. You know what I mean? Like, I was able to pull a lot of info from there and just, you know, kind of get a feel for who you are and what you do. The picture that they painted of you is incredible.
I appreciate it. If I have one, then I'm sure everyone will have one shortly. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I guess so, right? But how did that come to be? What was the genesis of that documentary?
Yeah, I've worked with WCWH Media for a little bit, working with the Chef to Chef conference, with Platecraft, you know, writing some articles. And I think it was just kind of an evolution of the work that we've done together, you know, where we hope to, you know, help take the industry and, you know, the things that we're very passionate about within the industry, you know, mentorship and, you know, kind of the state of it and leaving it better than we found it. And I think it was just, you know, just the next step in that evolution.
And, you know, there's this, what seems to be a union between competitive cooking and mentorship. At least I see from maybe your perspective.
Absolutely. My very first competition in Washington, D.C. was where I met my first mentor. And subsequently through, you know, the next 23 competitions or whatever, you know, I met so many people who were impactful to me, who mentored me over the years, whether it was judges or chefs that I ended up going to work for. And then, you know, you pay it forward, right? A lot of people invested in me. And then at a point, you know, you can only go out and compete so much. You begin to live vicariously through the people who work with you. And you want to see them get out there and be successful. And that's what it's all about.
How are you identifying a potential mentee?
I think it's easy. I think they kind of identify themselves. It's an attitude. They're hungry. They are always looking for the next challenge. They always rise to the occasion. And, you know, typically, you know, there's some people that you have to kind of pull along, and there's other people you just let them off the porch. And, you know, those mentees that have gone on to do so well, you know, I was just there to guide them. They were already on, you know, a very solid path.
In my career in distribution, food distribution, you know, it was in management, and you find these people, sometimes you see in them what they don't see in themselves, and they're not ready to take the next step or, you know, enter into the next phase. And you kind of have to push them, and you kind of have to push them in a way where they might exit the business because you see in them something that they don't see. Do you run into that as well?
Yes, there's certainly been that throughout the years where, as mentors, the best thing that we can do is kind of hold up a mirror and show people what you see in them, you know, the best of them, what they're capable of achieving. Yeah, there's been some over the years that took a nudge. You know, maybe their confidence wasn't where it could be. But getting out there competing you know, doing the preparation, practicing, and then getting out there and yielding a positive result, move the needle in the right direction.
There's hardly anything that you can find that's disappointing as you see somebody and they're a diamond and they just don't have that drive or they don't have the vision and you have to let them go. That's happened to me a number of times. It actually put me in a place while that was happening where I didn't want a mentor anymore. I didn't want to put in the effort because it seems like it puts you in a bad place in your own mental state.
I remember early on, you know, that was for years I've said it to my mentees, you know, as they're ready to move on into their own kitchens. You know, the greatest mistakes that I've made in the past at times is wanting it for someone more than they want it for themselves, to kind of accept that, you know, everyone has their own path and everyone has their own set of motivations. Who want to excel, you know, those are the people that you get behind and put your efforts into. And for those that just, you know, are looking forward to the days off, you know, to go fishing with their kids, that's just as important. And it's recognizing that and making sure they have it.
I think we've all learned that part of it over the last maybe, 4 or 5 years, how important it is to spend time with the family and take an eyeball or two off of the office or the kitchen.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, COVID was kind of a game changer for a lot of us, I think, but you can't get the time back.
You can't get it back. And then you realize what you've actually given up. That's the amazing part. That's kind of what I saw coming out of the pandemic. It's that time is gone. And now what do? You know, you don't want to cry about it. You want to pick up your boots, you know, pick yourself up by the bootstraps and make a go of it. And at that point, you got to make some choices. But, you know, I want to transition, Chef. I want to get into the competitive aspect of cooking. And I want to know what you find compelling about that.
Sure. I mean, you know, back in the day, I think what got me into it was not going to culinary school or getting my culinary degree or anything like that. And so coming up through apprenticeships, competition gave me a way to kind of benchmark my skills. And, you know, what I found very quickly was it was a way to refine my skills and to network. That network has been so important over the years for so many reasons. But that's what I think kept me coming back to it. You know, there's always the rush of getting a medal or something like that, but it's the relationships made, it's the journey. All of those things have been so rewarding.
What's the correlation between the rush of the competition and a Friday night dinner rush? Full tickets, full tickets. You know, the pass is getting, you know, overloaded and everybody's, you know, need hands, need runners, need all these things. Yeah. Is it the same? Same feeling?
It's very much the same. And I would say, you know, that's part of the value of competition is, you know, as the saying goes, perfect practice makes perfect performance. And, you know, all of the skills that you learn when you become a successful competitor are applicable every night on the line. It's, you know, keeping your station neat. It's making sure you have your mise en place, everything's organized, knives are sharp, you know, uniforms pressed and ready, you're on time, you have a sense of urgency. All of those things that kind of get hammered into you in competition, you know, the things that make you a successful competitor make you successful on the line.
We're in and around the same age bracket. Though I've never worked in the kitchen, they tried to bring me in and I couldn't do it. I had to always be front of the house. Back then it was, you're out all night and you still show up for your shift, no matter what happens. You're an actual working chef today. Is that the same kind of thing going on out there now? Or is it everybody's kind of buttoned up and...
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, certainly early 2000s, it was kind of a work hard, play hard mentality. Certainly had those days where, you know, you're just going multiple days with no sleep and you're going out too much and spending too much time with the guys outside of work and still getting the job done. I don't know if it's just the kitchen that I'm in, the people that I'm around, or if it's culturally, you know, but I do see a change. You know, I think it's a bit more buttoned up. I think it's a bit more focused, a bit more intentional. And, you know, there's not to say that there's, you know, not times to blow off steam. I think today is just a little more, perhaps a little more driven, a little more goal-oriented than it was in the beginning.
Well, it's one thing to go from line cooks and underlings into the competitive nature of where you've been and kind of what's coming up here in February. How is it that you prepare mentally to go up against Michelin chefs and beard chefs and that sort of breed? How do you approach that? And you're no slouch yourself. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you're 23, you're 23 competitions in, you've won them. You've done a lot of great stuff. How do you manage that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the same as being at work, right? It's, you know, in DC we cooked for three presidential administrations and, you know, professional athletes and celebrities and all that. You don't get nervous because, you know, at the end of the day, you're cooking for yourself, right? You're kind of running your own race. It's the same in competition. You know, you don't really worry about the person next to you so much. You over-prepare and you execute. Once the food goes out, it's on the judges to determine who executed at the highest level. And at the same time, all of that's very subjective. You know, I think you go into competitions knowing that everything's subjective. You can put up the exact same food 2 days in a row for two different sets of judges and yield different results. And so if you're there for the journey, if you're there to push yourself, to refine your skills, to network, a medal or, you know, how you place or whatever is just kind of sprinkles on the cupcake. The only pressure that should exist is what you're putting on yourself to perform and be better than you were yesterday.
What's the difference in your own personal lesson in winning a competition versus not necessarily coming in last place, but even coming in second or third? What's the lesson there?
I look at the bronze medals, and those were some of the best competitions I was ever in. You know, I think about the people that I met. I think about the road trips with my friends. I think about the critiques that I received from the judges. To be completely honest, the bronze medals are worth a whole lot more than the golds. You know, showing up, cooking, and you know, they say, great job, you nailed it, isn't as useful as getting that critique and coming away better than you were when you arrived. Yeah, it's about the journey. One of my favorite medals was a bronze medal. I was cooking with Team USA, a group of people that I love, that I would be in a kitchen with any day of the week. Massively talented individuals. And that day, things just didn't shake out the way we needed it to. Things that were out of our control happened and you know, didn't yield the medal that we wanted in terms of representing our nation. But at the end of the day, when I look back, man, it was such an extraordinary experience and I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Folks out there, audience, food fam, Chef was part of the U.S. Culinary Olympics, and was that 2020, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that is, to me, that would be such an honor to take part in something like that. You know, and if I'm putting myself in, you know, if I put your apron on, looking through your eyes, I would just be happy to show up, even if we didn't place, even if there wasn't a medal, just the fact that you're competing on that level for me would just be terrific. I presume that for the team and for yourself, it's probably something similar. Although, hey man, everybody wants to take home the gold or place, right?
All right. Absolutely. You know, it's a weight. It's anytime you have, you know, the flag on your jacket, it's heavy. It's a different kind of weight than when you're competing individually and representing yourself. That's tough. And our coach has really hammered that into us. You know, you're representing everyone when you go out there, you know, whether you're from Norway or Canada or Germany or Italy, everyone's there for the same purpose, you know, to represent their nation proudly and to finish on the podium. But just having the opportunity is incredible.
I'm not sure that the average person, even the average chef, knows the amount of practice that goes into the U.S. Culinary Olympics. You guys usually train over at Fort Harrison in Clearwater, right?
Right.
Can you touch on what sort of training that you guys do? I know that a lot of the equipment, the same equipment that is in...
Yeah, Stuttgart.
Okay. So the same equipment that you're using there, you actually have that same equipment in Fort Harrison and you practice and it's like the real deal happening here in Clearwater.
That's the goal. You hope so. You want to be as close as you can be to, you know, what the situation is going to be the day of. You know, my first competition was in Germany. It was 2012 as an individual. And, you know, for that, it was 18 months of preparation. It's every day off, coming in early for work and working on pieces. The goal of over-preparing so the day of the competition. I competed 8 times in preparation for Germany in 2012. And you want the competition to be easy compared to what you've put yourself through before you arrive there. And, you know, Team USA, it's something very similar. Long practice sessions, it's brainstorming, it's very late nights, very, very long days, an extraordinary coaching team. And that's the practice session. You know, the real work is the time in between the practice sessions when you're working on your individual pieces. Because you don't want to be the person that shows up without your homework. You don't want to let the person next to you down. You don't want to let your nation down. And so much work goes in between those sessions. And then when you show up day of, you know, you've got to be top of your game. So you get a quality practice session out of it.
Looking forward to February, and in full disclosure, we talked about this yesterday, Chef. You're scheduled to compete in February at NAFM for the U.S. Culinary Open. Mm-hmm. And it's a major event. It's, you know, the Chef Nick and Chef Polly who are putting this competition on are beautiful people. And they've been putting this together and working on this project for a few years now. So it's finally mm-hmm. come to fruition. As everything in the restaurant industry goes, there's curveballs. It's supposed to be where you have your assistant. Tell us about the parameters of the assistant and what happened.
Sure. So your assistant, you know, this is someone who's 25 years or younger. And typically this is someone, for me, it's someone that you've worked with extensively who, you know, knows the program, who knows, you know, kind of your standards and expectations going into it. And it's someone that ideally you're grooming to be a competitor. Yeah, my person for this year, something unexpected came up. And they had to go back home for an extended period of time, take care of some family matters. So, you know, these things come up and you try to adjust and move on and we'll see where it lands.
It's akin to the walk-in cooler going down or, you know, something happens and you don't have gas for the, you know, for the ovens and stuff. Like this is like standard fare stuff, right?
It is. Absolutely. I mean, you know, in Germany with Team USA, our centerpiece collapsed. You have to put up a centerpiece, and it collapsed in the first 10 minutes. Some of our food didn't make it into the oven in time. You know, you still get the program out. You still do everything you can to cross the finish line and give it your best effort. You adjust on the fly.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
You know, I feel I always have a positive outlook. I have to have a positive outlook or else I'm not leaving my house. You know what I mean? You know, do you know what I'm saying? Right. So even in spite of the fact that these things are happening, I'm in your corner and I'm rooting for you to pull this off and get out there. Let's say I believe you're gonna. So when you get there, in terms of showcasing your talents and representing the club chef community, how do you hope your performance might inspire other chefs? You know, perhaps it might be whoever it is, your assistant or some other underlings where you are now. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always fun to get out to these things, to high-profile competitions, you know, to show what we're capable of coming from country clubs. I think, you know, 20, 25 years ago, there was kind of a stigma surrounding country club cuisine that wasn't extremely apt. And it's nice, you know, to be able to get out there and kind of stretch your legs a little bit and put up some fun food and demonstrate what country club cuisine can be.
Well, there's a huge difference. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to work with quite a number of chefs over the years, into the thousands of chefs over my span, my career. You know, you're talking, you know, from an independent restaurant to a corporate restaurant
to a hotel chef, to a country club chef, to institutional chefs. Like there's such a contrast between each one of those, because you're dealing with different challenges. Your clientele, they're all different. How do you approach that? In my estimation and in my experiences, I see chefs, either you grow up in that club and in that club atmosphere and never leave it, or a lot mm-hmm. of the restaurant chefs want to end up at the club because that's kind of their, you know, after their, you know, 30, 40, 50 year career, that's kind of like their exit point. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think every segment of the industry, you know, poses its challenges, you know, and the club world, especially, you know, with our club where we are, we're very seasonal. Our membership, we're at the top of a mountain. There's not a lot of places to go to outside of our club to grab food. So we're very aggressive. We change our menus on a weekly basis. Our members have very, very high expectations, as they should. So inherently, there's a ton of pressure there to be creative, to change the menu very aggressively, and at the same time, to offer very high quality without much time to, or without any time really, for menu training and speccing and, you know, menu rollouts and all these things. Everything's kind of on the fly, which is different from clubs that I've been in before, and, you know, might be different from maybe a restaurant or hotel or resort or something like that. I've worked in all of them, you know, in some capacity, and they're all challenging. You know, every place has its challenges, but for clubs, you know, that's kind of what we excel at.
If there's a young culinarian here listening and they have an opportunity to pivot left or pivot right, you know, into from restaurants versus clubs and whatnot, if you were going to give advice, what would it be? What direction would you say to go into?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, first and foremost, if there's a segment that speaks to you, you know, that's your assignment. You know, explore that to the fullest extent. I can tell you for me, in the early 2000s, there was a time when I said, you know what, I'm done with clubs. And we happened to be in a recession. I was in Washington, D.C., and restaurants weren't hiring. You know, Ritz-Carlton was on a hiring freeze, but clubs were still going. There was another time, you know, mid 2010, 2011, said, you know what, I don't know if clubs are for me. I'm going to take a look around. Again, we're in a recession. Clubs are still hiring and still going. So there's some insulation there. There's a little bit of job security kind of baked into it that you might not see other, you know, in other places in the industry. The hours can be, while they're long, they can be a little more humane than other segments of the industry. But more than anything for me, it's seeing the same people every day, having the conversations that go for years and years, the depth of relationships that we build. And that's not for everyone, but for me, that's part of what drives me to stay in clubs, are the friendships, you know, that I've made over the years, members that I still stay in touch with from, you know, early on in my career to now. It's really rewarding. It's fun to cook for those folks night after night. It's like your family. And that's been a big part of it for me, why I've stayed in it.
Well, you know, Chef Tony is over here shaking his head.
You know, hey, Chef Scott, I mean, look, I totally understand where you're coming from. Speaking regarding, you know, seeing the same customer, which is just our residents right now. So I see them day in, day out. So they do expect a lot from you, right? You know, with many changes. But one thing they don't expect is the price increase. I'm sure you experience the same thing at clubs, right?
Right.
They don't want the champagne taste on a beer budget.
It's tough. I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, built into it as well, right? You
absolutely.
Know, if I'm paying dues, why am I paying as much here as I am at the restaurant down the street if I've already paid dues to be here? And so, you know, it's incumbent upon us to provide some education and help them understand where the money's going and to be, you know, faithful stewards of our budgets and all that. But yeah, that can certainly be a challenge.
Coming out of COVID, I mean, even during COVID, at the time I was working at a produce company, we stayed busy with some institutional business, but also the clubs. The clubs were, you know, here in Florida, the clubs were open. By nature of the dynamic of the country club, the residents, the members, they were still able to go and eat and enjoy the facilities. And at the time, it was like to be outside, you're on the golf course. So there was still food. There was still culinary happening. There was still some action there. You know, if it's me, to circle back to that question I had asked you, I mean, if you're looking, for, you know, job security wise, I feel country clubs are the way to go.
Or a retirement community.
Mm-hmm. Or a retirement community, right. Yeah. Well, Regency Oaks is it's a retirement community, but it's like a country club.
Yeah, because, you know, we have a pretty healthy budget, per se. And, you know, and I am lucky enough to be able to get some higher-end product in-house, do, you know, different things, and have be able to have to hold different events once a week and once a month or so. So that is really cool.
You're lucky. You have a gastro pub on property, man.
We do.
What are you talking about?
We do. Yeah, and, you know, and we are trying to elevate the food, you know, in the gastro pub, and also the for our regular dining room resident as well. So, you know, that's my main focus, is to do that.
Chef Scott, do you prefer members only clubs versus, you know, clubs that are open to the general public?
Yes, 100%.
And why is that?
I mean, a couple of reasons. I mean, you know, one of the big things is culture. You know, our club, Colostasia Club, I think one of the most extraordinary things about it is the culture. You know, it's a relatively small club compared to where I've been before. We have 350 members, you know, that stretches out to, you know, 900,000 folks with spouses and kids and all that stuff in the summer. But it's such a healthy culture. You know, every member that comes in is vetted, and it feels so familial. The members are the best members that I've ever worked with. And I don't know that you can, you know, you just can't replicate that at a club that has a ton of folks coming into it from the outside. You know, it's kind of baked into the identity of our club. You know, they're very tightly knit. They know who they want joining as members. You know, it's very casual. It's very laid back. It's very respectful. They're appreciative of where they are. They're just wonderful folks. Very approachable. And I'm not sure that we could replicate that in a place that just kind of, you know, lets everyone know.
Are you still running into challenges finding adequate personnel?
We aren't, because we work with H2Bs and J1s. And so, you know, this time of the year right now, we're staffing up for May opening. And so, you know, a lot of our folks are coming out of South Africa, Mexico, Europe. And, you know, we find that there's a very, very healthy pool of extraordinarily professional, talented folks who are looking for seasonal work. I'll travel down to Florida in January for to finalize my staff for the coming season. But we're very fortunate in that respect. I've definitely been in that fight for years and years and years in D.C. and Charlotte at large year-round clubs. It's nice, you know, you can build a depth of bench that you can't in seasonal clubs when you're at the year-round clubs. But in terms of just staffing the line and getting great folks, we're very fortunate in that way.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
What do you see as some of the biggest challenges in culinary coming into 25 and 26?
I think it's definitely what you touched on with staffing. You know, I think before COVID, I remember a group of respected, esteemed chefs that I've looked up to for a while, having dinner with them and talking about staffing and trying to understand how we move forward, how we meet our staffing needs. You know, this was 2018. Once COVID happened, there was, you know, a migration. A lot of folks fell out of the food and beverage industry and just haven't come back. Enrollment, you know, has been affected at culinary schools. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that I've seen. Of course, we've got increasing prices. Prices go up, come down. But staffing, that's been a trend for years and years. And I think it speaks to this generation's expectations. It speaks to the culture that has, you know, kind of permeated our industry for years. And, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us to make the adjustments needed to make sure that this is an attractive industry for young people to come into. And, you know, they see it as a place where they can thrive. But yeah, I mean, I think staffing is kind of the number one issue.
This many years removed from COVID, from the epidemic, that this is still a top five topic in discussions is amazing. When we got into 21 and 22, and you know, everybody's starting to, you know, go on vacations, and you know, there was, you know, tourism started to skyrocket, and everybody was, there was a lot of action and movement around the country and abroad. I thought this was going to go away. I thought the challenge was going to just kind of dissipate and, you know, be a footnote, but it's not. The people that you know, that left the industry and never came back, I originally thought, like, good riddance. I figured those were the slackers, you know, that in the end we call them slackers, right? I thought those were those people. Mm-hmm. But as it turns out, no, it wasn't. There were some really talented people, hardworking people, 100%. That just kind of turned it back and walked away.
Hey, Chef Scott, I think to add on that, I think that coming out of COVID, you know, the expectation of salary for line cooks or for prep cooks or for utility staff has gone way up. So I think that mm-hmm. plays definitely a big part into the staffing issues that we are facing today.
I agree completely. I know our wages when I was at Myers Park, I think 2018 to 2022, I worked there a few times, our wages increased somewhere around 40% just in those 4 years. And that's to, you know, remain competitive with the folks down the street. I think clubs specifically, you know, have been challenged to get wages where they need to be, even though the benefits are good. You know, it's hard to sell kids on 401k. It's hard to sell kids on paid time off. You know, they're looking at the size of their paycheck. Cost of living has gone up so much. You know, everybody knows that. Cost of groceries, cost of rent. And so, you know, I think that's something that we have to do a better job of. There was a survey that came out yesterday from the Club Management Association of America, you know, talking about, you know, how many clubs are in the United States, how many people are employed, and what the payroll is. Not something I'd be super proud of when you do the math and divide it all out. You know, if I'm a kid and I've got the choice between going into this industry and FedEx, and I'm not particularly passionate about this industry, I'm probably going with FedEx based on the numbers. You know, that's something we need to adjust. I don't think that's always been the case. I mean, I think this industry has been a big tent historically for folks who not only are passionate about what we do, but just for folks who want to be able to make a good living, you know, doing something that they're good at. And, you know, maybe they enjoy the camaraderie of the kitchen. Maybe they enjoy the hours for whatever reason. This was a place where they could find that. And I think that's the difference is those people are the ones, you know, in large part who migrated away because they can find, you know, a better return on their investment somewhere else. Thankfully, we do have people who are passionate about the industry still joining. We just overall have to make this more attractive to grow our numbers.
Everything changed over the last 20 plus years with Food Network and culinarians being kind of held up on a pedestal and whatnot. Before this last, you know, couple of decades, you fell into the kitchen. Most people didn't go to mm-hmm. to school for it. You know, you had troubles. You ended up in the kitchen. You ended up on dish, and you know, and then from the dish pit, you kind of were pulled into, I'd like to make a couple of more dollars, so yeah, I'll work the line or whatever. And then you somewhere along that path, you found your passion for the industry. Mm-hmm. In today's world, there's so many different options. And yeah, I mean, in the world of Amazon and, you know, home deliveries and everything, it's easier just to hop in a truck and deliver packages than it is to 12, 14 hours on your feet, you know, on the line and dealing with all that. I mean, you need to know you have a passion before you get into the building.
Absolutely. You know, if you can stay home and be a content creator, you might take that path before you put on a white coat and go into the kitchen, you know, for 12 hours a day.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. You're talking to me. We're old people. You know, we have right. our whole, and here we are doing content. Obviously it's quality content, you know, equipment and all the stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
It isn't just like iPhones and whatever, but at the end of the day, like, you know, to find a path where you can have cameras and microphones and somehow make a living out of that, it's mind blowing. It is a mind blowing thing where, yeah, like instead of me, like, you know, I'm fortunate. In my life, I've been fortunate and, you know, in my work and career and everything. But if I wasn't, I would be doing the same thing as everybody else. I would be standing in the line. I would have done it differently, you know, not, and I don't know necessarily it would have been positive. It just would have been different. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't get it anymore.
It's tough.
Like everybody works for Amazon now. You know what I mean? It's just, it's get in the truck, get in the truck and leave the packages.
It's too easy, right?
Right, right.
That's the answer.
Is it though? I don't know. I see in my neighborhood, there's 7 trucks constantly, just a different, you know, and I think to myself, man, they just shop. Everybody shops online. Does anyone go to the store anymore? But then you go to Publix or you go to one of the different, you know, groceries and they're mobbed in there too. I don't get it.
Right.
I don't get it. All right, Scott, I am looking forward to shaking your hand and meeting you. How do people find you? Are you big on socials? How do we get you?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Chef Scott Craig. You can find me at chefscottcraig.com. There's a couple different ways there.
Excellent. And man, you already know what you're supposed to be cooking up and stuff, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not waiting until the day before.
Okay. All right. I'm just asking. All right. I'm going to get on a call with you and I'm going to pick your brain about some stuff about that. But listen, I appreciate you coming on the program today, Chef, and also Chef Tony.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. You guys are both gentlemen. Thank you kindly. John, as always, man, you're freaking amazing. You're like sharpshooter with that camera, baby. All right. Don't forget to check out Peninsula Food Service out there, folks, here in Central Florida for your meats. Let's check them out, too. PeninsulaFoodService.com. Thank you kindly. We are out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.